Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast, presented by KFC. I'm your host, Wayne Liu of Yahoo Sports Canada. On this week's episode, I have TSN's lead Toronto Raptors reporter, Josh Lewenberg.
What's happening, Will?
How you doing, man? Well, apparently we're neighbors.
We are, yeah. I'm just down the street. Yeah. I didn't even know you guys were located here.
At this undisclosed location.
Yes.
So the Raptors are on an 11-game win streak. Things are very, very good right now. I almost feel like, in a strange way, it's a lot easier to talk about the team when they have some losses in there, just because you can kind of think more critically about it. But, I mean, 11-game win streak. What has stood out to you over this 11-game win streak? Because, quite honestly, you know, it's not a lot to nitpick, I guess.
Yeah, I think you tweeted it out earlier, the balance and the scoring, and that's sort of been the case each night. It's like a different guy is stepping up, or even Nick mentioned the other day, it's hard to find a through line from game to game in terms of either a player or an area of the game where they're just dominating night in and night out. It's like a different guy, a different thing. Defense, offense. I mean, their offense has obviously been great, especially since they got some of those guys back. Norm before the recent injury, Siakam. But I think what stands out more than anything else, and you sort of touched on it there, is the schedule. Like, they've been beating up on bad teams, which is great. I mean, that's what good teams do, and they don't make their schedule, obviously. All you can do is play the teams in front of you. I think at some point, and obviously this week will be much more telling with a couple games against Indiana, and then the schedule will get a little bit tougher. We'll find out more about what this team actually is, but I think this is a pretty encouraging stretch, all things considered, with the injuries and the schedule being what it is.
Yeah, I mean, you can really only play the teams in front of you, and at least they've, you know what's funny, they haven't caught, like, I think they've made up one game on Milwaukee.
Yeah.
They had like an 11-game win streak as well, I think. But yeah, I mean, at least to sort of push them ahead to that second seed. The news is already out. Nick Nurse is going to be coaching the Team Giannis, and, you know, Kyle and Pascal will also be there. We'll see what teams they're on. They're going to be drafted, I think, on Thursday night.
Yep. Busy day on Thursday.
I was going to say, yeah, that's a weird time to schedule all that.
They did that last year, too, I think. The trade deadline followed by the All-Star draft. I'm surprised that they wouldn't try and spread it out a little bit more. But, yeah. I mean, you know, the NBA loves to have things on the Thursday to pair with their TNT coverage.
That is true. So
there's only so many Thursdays, because you've got to announce the starters, then the next week is the reserves, yeah, and true. Then the draft, and then the actual game.
It is funny, because I always prepare, like, this is just like inside media stuff, I always feel like prepare like media coverage plans, like, you know, you pre-write, you know, Kyle Lowry's been named as a reserve. You can probably kind of
this year was especially easy when it came to that.
Oh, yeah. But then, you know, you're always writing on, like, oh, yeah, and it's going to be announced on TV, and you're going to watch it live, and you can see what happens. And it's always, like, half an hour before just Shams or Woj or somebody would just be like, here's the full list.
Spoiler alert.
just, like, you don't need to watch inside the NBA. It's always really funny. It reminds me of during free agency when Kevin Durant was, like, remember he was telling everyone to go follow the boardroom on Instagram?
Yep.
And then Woj was just, like, 10 minutes before that thing happened, he's like, you know, screw you guys, he's going to Brooklyn. It's always very funny to me. Anyway, so this 11-game win streak, I guess one of the more unfortunate things about it, if there's anything unfortunate about 11-game win streak, is that, again, like, the schedule has been really easy, so you can't really evaluate necessarily all the strengths and weaknesses of the team during that
stretch.
I feel
like we haven't been able to evaluate their strengths and weaknesses basically at any point this year, because it's either been the injuries or now it's been the, like, a stretch of beatable opponents. This has been a weird year for them. We know they're good, like, that's clear, but I'm not sure that we know how good, or especially going into the deadline, and we'll talk about that, but it's like, what do they need?
Yep.
That's sort of more unclear through 50 games than it would normally be through 50 games, and then what do they have to give up? What's expendable? And I think that's more unclear than usual at this point of the year, too.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, this is where I'm thinking about it in terms of just, you head into trade deadline, you usually have a strategy. I think, ideally, they can make some sort of they could push all their bottom end pieces and sort of, you know, just aggregate them into one bigger piece that may crack the top seven in the rotation.
Yeah.
Ideally, obviously, you get like a star that, you know, can really, really push you over the top in the playoffs. But, you know, just asking you in general, you put out a whole piece about this morning on Monday morning. What is the Raptors' approach at the trade deadline right now?
I mean, I think we were just talking about this off air. I think this is going to be a quiet year in general around the NBA for a few reasons. One, I think there's the parity in the league, which everyone's talking about right now, which is great. But at the same time, there are not that many teams that are clear sellers right now that are completely out of it, that aren't in the playoffs, that aren't trying to push towards the playoffs. So there's that. And then I think a lot of teams have already started looking ahead to 2021, hoarding cap space, and are going to be reluctant to take on any long-term salary. And the Raptors are obviously in that mix. So I think, first of all, there aren't that many players available because it's a seller's market. And the Raptors, I feel strongly, aren't going to be interested in any of the guys that are tied to long-term contracts, unless it's an expiring deal or a player that has 1 year left on their deal. That probably rules them out. They're probably not interested. A guy like Robert Covington, who I like a lot and I think would fit in great with the Raptors, but he's signed through 2021-22. So that could rule him out. I mean, I think the options are limited, first of all, for the Raptors. And then I just think the situation is so much different than it was last year. Like last year was a busy deadline, I would say, in general. I think 19 deals in total, and the Raptors were responsible for three of them, two of them just small
financial deals.
But I think in hindsight, it's pretty safe to say that the most impactful deal of the day was the Marc Gasol trade.
Yeah, for sure.
They won a championship because of it. Would they have won a championship without Marc Gasol? Maybe, but probably not.
Probably not,
Probably not. So that was huge. I mean, you could argue that the Clippers and Sixers deal was big because it sort of cleared the table for the Clippers to do what they did this summer.
Right.
But the Raptors were huge players last year, but they sort of had to be at the time. Like, the situation called for it because you have Kawhi, expiring deal. So you had the one-year window, assuming he was going to leave. But even though it was a one-year window, even if you hoped he was going to stay because you were trying to convince him to stay. So there was every incentive, every sort of sense of urgency to go out and to find an upgrade, make the team better, and increase your chances of competing for a championship. And then you've got teams around you, Milwaukee and Philadelphia, making big moves earlier in the day. So I think that sort of put some pressure on them as well. But I think there's still a window of opportunity here, clearly, in the Eastern Conference. That hasn't changed. But the roster construction has. You don't have that superstar anymore where you're trying to add pieces around him and build around him.
Yeah.
You've got, as we were talking about earlier, a ton of balance, some pretty good depth. But going out, you're not going to add a superstar player, which is what they, like a lot of other teams, would love to add. Those guys just aren't out there. So to go out and add a Marc Gasol-type player, a really good role player, just doesn't move the needle as much as it did last year, which means you're probably not willing to give up as much for that player as you were last year.
Yeah, and you know that, along with the fact that It's not shaping up to be that sexy of a trade deadline. Obviously, a lot could happen between now and then. But also, realistically, it just seems like a lot of teams feel like they have something to play for this year.
Yeah.
It seems to be a lot more buyers than sellers. It's a seller's market. And, I mean, you look at the names, it's just not that sexy. It's like, maybe Jrue Holiday's available. It's like, I mean, you know, the Raptors are, people already don't really necessarily always like the two-point guard combination. Do you want three?
Yeah.
I
like him a lot, but it's another situation where it's like one of the things that I liked, this is such a weird time of the year. It's a fun time, but it's also a little bit annoying where you've got, in the days leading up to it, all the rumors and the speculation, and I'm not one to, I'm not super into that kind of thing, the rumors and the speculation. What I try to do, I mean, obviously I talk to people around the team and try and get a sense of their approach, but the Raptors, as we know, are as tight-lipped as any organization in the NBA. So it's like, you try to put yourself into their mindset, into their shoes. What is Masai thinking right now? What has he done in the past in these situations? What's his approach like? But also, what's the motivation? Why would they make a move? Why wouldn't they make a move? And then you've got to do the same thing, obviously, with the other teams. So in the case of New Orleans, you're just thinking, okay, well, they're a team for years that have been trying desperately to squeeze into the playoffs, to win. They're not interested in a rebuild. And now that they've got Zion, I imagine they're especially not interested in a rebuild. They right. put this roster together, which was going to the season, it was an intriguing yeah. roster, and you lose Zion, now you get him back. I imagine they'd want to see what this group looks like, even if they're not going to make the playoffs this year, going into next season. Wouldn't you want to have an idea of what this group looks like or can be before you start selling guys off?
Yeah, exactly.
Are you going to get more for Jrue Holiday now than you would in 4 months from now?
I mean, like, I guess the ideal Jrue Holiday team would be a team like the Clippers, who have this, you know, that superstar pressure, as you mentioned. That is obviously the same as the run the Raptors had last year, although Kawhi is tied into at least minimum 2 years. But there is a pressure there, and you can look at their point guard situation with, like, I guess Lou Williams is a point guard, but not really.
No,
he's a creator, but he creates a lot for himself, or Montrez, but that's about it. And then, you know, Patrick Beverley's fine role player. If he's coming off your bench, you're probably pretty happy. But ideally, you would like to get someone like Jrue Holiday who could play impact minutes for them and set the table. And a couple other teams in the NBA, maybe the Lakers, obviously, with Jrue Holiday. But, I mean, even then, his contract's so big, it's hard to make that possible.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine New Orleans picking up a lot of phone calls from the Lakers, just in general. I feel like they're
then
done
there's
with,
that.
I feel like they're done with that part.
Yeah.
After the Anthony Davis thing. So yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, like it's not necessarily that exciting of a trade deadline. But I mean, I still think that, you know, even having said all that, there will still be activity, as there always is, and I think there are still things for the Raptors to clean up. It's not a perfect team, and I thought about it this way. What is their biggest area of concern if you're looking to address something, right? And I'll give you a couple of things here. Right now they're 13th in offensive rating, which is fine. But not necessarily great. Mm-hmm. Last couple of years, they've been top 10, sometimes top 5. They are 26 in defensive rebounding percentage. You know, obviously, that's just not great. The small forward production, generally speaking, for a team that is going to the playoffs and just a number 2 seed, it's a little suspect. You know, OG has been really good at times, but also has been kind of inconsistent in that role, at least offensively with his output. And also, just in terms of the backup small forward, I mean, I'm not even sure who that is. Norm? He's too small for that.
Rondé.
Yeah, Rondé. I mean, offensively for a small forward,
yeah,
it's tricky. Or, you know, even a third-string point guard slash center. So those four concerns right there. I mean, if you had to address one of them.
That's what makes this so interesting for the Raptors, because I would say, like, kind of all of the above right now in that mm-hmm. they, I mean, I don't think any of them are glaring needs, at least compared to some of the glaring needs positionally or, like, area of the game that they've had needs in the past. But so I sort of indicated it earlier with what I was saying, and then I've written it today as well, is I don't expect, like a lot of people, I don't expect the Raptors to do anything big at the deadline. What I do think they could do is package a couple of those end of the rotation, end of bench guys, like you mentioned, with maybe a second round pick or a couple second round picks, or maybe a first round pick if the return moves the needle enough. But I look at the team and I don't see that glaring area of need. What I see is a lot of things that they could use.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think all those things that you mentioned, I mean, offensively, they're better than, what did you say, 13th?
Yeah, I would say they're a top 10 offense when everyone's healthy.
Their offense has been really good when Van Vliet and Lowry have been healthy. When everybody has been healthy, or most of the guys have been healthy, but specifically Lowry and Van Vliet, your point guards, and then mm-hmm. Marc Gasol, who's probably not your third best playmaker, he's up there. Yeah. So I do think that that's an area of need from an insurance standpoint,
right?
Because if anything were to happen to one of you only have two traditional point guards on the roster. If anything were to happen to either of those guys, I think they'd be in big trouble from an offensive standpoint. So I don't know if it's necessarily a third point guard, but another guy that can make plays and handle the ball. Another big from an insurance standpoint, because I think it's sort of the same idea as if Ibaka or Gasol were to go down.
And they are older players.
They are older players. Gasol's already been dealing with a lingering hamstring issue. And maybe that addresses the rebounding concern if you go out and get a rebounding big. And then, yeah, if you're looking for an actual upgrade, a guy that's going to step in and play consistent minutes, maybe as a starter, the area then of need would probably be small forward, because that's really the one position with OG that's sort of been up and down this year, inconsistent. So maybe that would be your area of need if you're looking for maybe not an insurance guy, but an actual guy that that steps in and plays meaningful minutes. I mean, it's interesting with Masai. Like I said, I try to get in his head, because He's a guy that after last year, it's easy to forget that the defining characteristic of Masai Ujiri as an executive had been patience. He makes this a couple of big moves, bold moves last year, but I wouldn't say he's an aggressive general manager.
We're not talking about Daryl Morey over here,
right?
It's so, not every year there's going to be trade rumors for everybody.
So what do we know about Masai? We know that he tends to be patient. He likes to give his teams an opportunity to basically decide their own fate. If they perform and play well, he keeps them together. When they haven't, then that's when he's made changes. Then the second thing is he's on record as saying that he doesn't like to make moves in the middle of the season. He prefers to do that in the offseason. He's not afraid to make a big move when he's needed to. So anytime he's deviated from either of those approaches that we talked about, it's been when the situation has called for it. So in 2017, there was a glaring need at power forward. They go out and they trade Terrence Ross for Serge Ibaka.
And the deadline deal for PJ.
And the deadline deal for PJ, which was an important one at the time, too. Then they run into this wall in the playoffs, and they get swept by Cleveland in the second round 2 years in a row. And he goes out and fires Dwayne Casey and trades DeMar for Kawhi and all of that. And then last year at the deadline, as we talked about, there was this window of opportunity where that sort of forced his hand as well, trading JV in the depth for Gasol. But outside of that, he's been pretty consistent in the way that he's approached, especially long-term assets. And I know he says he doesn't like looking at them as assets, but he's a smart guy and he's been calculated. I don't say that in like an evil sitting in a big chair stroking his cat and doing an evil laugh type of way, but he's been opportunistic in the way that he's made his moves. So he's not the type of guy that's going to go out there and make a move for the sake of making a move just because they have an opportunity here in the East. It has to make sense. And like we've been saying now, it's just, I don't think there's that many things that make sense for a lot of teams, but specifically for the Raptors, given their situation.
Yeah, I think that's well said for sure. The one thing I'm thinking about in terms of the trade deadline is you also got to think about it in terms of what pieces are you actually willing to work with, right? Are you willing to put an OG Anunoby on the table? Probably not. If it's for a short-term upgrade, there's not a great deal of upside in something like that. If it doesn't raise your ceiling that much, you're probably not doing it. I mean, like, they made a big trade involving Kawhi Leonard, and they managed to retain OG. So, I mean, on one part, it's just very good, negotiation at the time to not have to give up, Pascal or OG.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they clearly value him. He's, something that gets lost sometimes with OG is that he is the second youngest guy on the roster. I think O'Shea is the only guy that's younger than him.
And his sophomore season, which is when players tend to take a pretty big leap, was essentially a write-off. This is his second season, basically. So, yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Is Masai's been extremely reluctant to include OG in any kind of trade talk up to this point.
So I think he really believes in him. Yeah.
That's another question that you have to ask yourself is why would this be the time, be the moment where Masai suddenly changes course and includes a guy that he's never included in trade talks into a trade conversation and actually moves the guy? This doesn't seem like the time to do that, given what we believed to be on the market.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, this was touched on in the Zach Lowe's primer on ESPN.
Which
was excellent, of course. It was Zach. But, you know, he talked about, you know, like, just hypotheticals, like, you know, what if they make a move for, like, Jrue Holiday or anything like that? But it's like, yeah, you probably have to start with moving OG as a centerpiece of that. And it's like, at that point, I mean, obviously, you know, you don't really know what else is coming back in that kind of deal. But your roster balance is just completely thrown out of whack at that point. And also, like, long-term upside, what are you really doing? You're getting a very expensive 31-year-old point guard when you already have a very expensive 34-year-old point guard, and you're about to pay another a 25-year-old point guard a new contract. Doesn't make any sense to do that.
And then it brings us right back again to 2021, which exactly. Is always the elephant in the room when you're talking about the Raptors, a lot of teams in the NBA, but the Raptors, because it's their top priority, and it's been on their mind with every decision that they've made since the summer. The second Kawhi left, it was like, okay, well, now look ahead to 2021. And Jrue Holiday is a player option that season.
It's like 30-plus million?
Yeah, so, I mean, maybe he doesn't pick it up. But even if you argue that it's 50-50, which I wouldn't, even if you argue it's 50-50, they're not taking that chance of having a player under contract that season. Unless, I mean, the only way that I could see them taking money on past 2021 is if it's like a no-brainer, you're getting your superstar now. Forget about Giannis. Forget about any of those guys. You're getting the superstar now. Jrue Holiday is really good. I like Jrue Holiday, but he's not that guy.
Exactly. And, you know, if you look at the other assets, I mean, obviously OG is probably the only one that's like a more tangible one right now. But besides that, you have some smaller pieces. There's some contracts that you can use to match salary. Like, I don't think they'll think too hard about if they need to include McCaw or Stanley Johnson or even
Nick Nurse
Rondon.
Is not letting McCaw go anywhere.
Fair enough. Nick Nurse might just quit on the spot, actually.
He's like, standing in front of Masai's car. He's taking his cell phone, flushing it down the toilet. You are not trading Patrick McCaw.
He's playing the Dwayne Casey on the sideline defense. I really did enjoy seeing him do that for Detroit. I just felt really bad for him in Detroit. I mean, it just in general.
Yeah.
Unfortunate what's happened to him, but
he's making some money over there, though.
Yeah, that's true. He's at least getting paid for it. But you know, the only other asset really you look at is probably their first round pick this year, which is probably not going to be worth that much. Let's be real. The Raptors are, I think, they have the fourth best record in the NBA right now, behind the
third. I think
third. So it's Bucks, Lakers. I think it's just Bucks and Lakers. So they might have the third best record in the NBA
right now. Passed the Clippers, I believe.
Yeah. How about that?
Some irony there.
Yeah, just a little bit. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's not going to be necessarily that valuable a first round pick. But I am curious as to, like, how does a team like the Raptors, who have had so much success with getting undrafted guys, getting guys in the second round, and just developing guys, I mean, straight up just signing free agents and turning them into pretty nice pieces. How does a team like the Raptors specifically value a first-round pick like that?
I keep going back and forth on that, not just in terms of how the Raptors would value that first-round pick, but how valuable that first-round pick would be even on the market and what that could get you. On one hand, I do think of it like, okay, well, as we said, there aren't that many guys out there that are going to come in here and be a significant enough upgrade over what they already have that you can feel confident in saying, like, all right, this is worth it. Even if you're not giving up, like, let's say you're getting a small forward that could potentially start, right? Even if you're not giving up OG, you're just bringing in another small forward. It's like, okay, well, that sounds great. You're just adding talent. But are you willing to give up an asset? And in this case, the first round pick is definitely an asset. Mm-hmm. Are you willing to give up an asset for a guy that might not move the needle? Maybe he comes in and OG is better than him and he ends up sitting on the bench and then you've just spent an asset. So part of me thinks that maybe it just might be too much for anybody that you're just not sure whether or not he plays a significant role once everybody's healthy. And then the other end of the coin, which is what you mentioned, is they've had so much success finding guys, forget late first round or second round, like undrafted guys, that maybe this pick being late in the first round just isn't very valuable to them. And it's probably at this point more valuable to other teams that think, okay, well, it's still a first-round pick. We can flip it for something, or we can use it to draft a guy. It's probably more valuable to other teams right now than it would be for the Raptors. So maybe you can get something, and maybe the Raptors don't really stress the idea of giving up the asset for something that might be useful and might not be useful.
Yeah. And it's a funny time to talk about undrafted guys because I think they got 58 combined points out of their undrafted trio yesterday against the Bulls.
Pretty good.
I mean, it was the Bulls, but still, 58 points is 58 points.
Matt Thomas, too.
Matt Thomas.
Alex's boy.
Yeah, I didn't include him in expendable pieces because, you know, Alex would probably, I don't know, pull out his earbuds.
Nick Nurse is not allowing Masai to trade McCaw. Alex is not allowing Masai to trade Matt Thomas. We're running out of expendable pieces
here. I mean, OG's a fan favorite. Yeah. Sarge is a fan favorite. It's looking more and more likely. Like it's not going to be a major move in that respect.
Well, I would be so surprised. It's not impossible, and I mean, at this point, I'm reluctant to say that anything is impossible in the NBA. But it just seems so unlikely that Masai would break up any of those top seven.
Right. Exactly.
I just think. We talked about the way that he sort of approached things before. It's like, give guys a chance, prove themselves. And not only have they done that, and he spoke a few weeks ago and sort of expressed how proud he is of this group for doing what they've done this season.
Get chips or die trying.
Yes. Not only is there that, but I also think there's like that sense of intrigue that we all have with this group, especially with that top seven, because we didn't – I did the math yesterday. I think – they've had all of their top seven in 15 games, 15 Jeez. Of 50 games so far.
Okay.
So the sample size is incredibly small, but obviously there's reason for excitement to believe that, like, okay, well, once these seven guys are healthy at the same time, and, I mean, you hope that they will be, but assuming they are, who knows how high the ceiling is here. So I do think Masai wants to give them a chance to show what they've got, and I also think he just doesn't have enough of an evaluation from his side to go out and really be sure that if you're moving Norm, whoever you're getting back is an upgrade over Norm. And that's another thing is, like, Norm at one point seemed like somewhat of an expendable piece. He's got a pretty good contract from, like, a trade-matching standpoint.
Yeah.
Was having a career year, sort of expendable in the sense that you have a guy like Terrence Davis behind him. Same reason why they moved Terrence Ross in 2017, because you had Norman Powell behind him. But I think now he's played so well that maybe he's played himself out of that expendable role a little bit. And then also, I think the injury probably hurts his value to some degree. He's out at least a month.
Yeah, probably a month to 6 weeks, something like that. I mean, poor Norman Powell, man. He really has the worst timing with everything. Like, it's yeah, I just feel bad for the guy. It reminds me almost of, that year he was supposed to compete for that small forward spot, and OG gets it because he got an ankle injury at just the worst time, and then OG just took the spot and ran with it from that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully Norm, you know, gets back, because I feel like this is the first year where Norm's contributions, where it's not just like, oh, it's a really nice luxury that Norm's doing what he's doing.
They need
now
him.
It's like, wow, he's a difference maker off the bench. Like, and it was the consistency that really shined. I mean, throughout this 11-game win streak, obviously he's missed the last couple here because of the injury. But he was second in the team in scoring with, like, over 17 points a game.
And you just don't have that many guys on the team. And we talked about this in terms of their needs and why they might need another quasi-point guard or playmaker, because you don't have that many guys that can actually create offense, especially off the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And Norm's
mm-hmm.
one of those guys. It's like, yeah, he's not maybe in the Lou Williams mold where he's not creating offense for other guys necessarily. At some point, you still hope that he can reach that level in his growth in his game.
Yeah, for sure.
He's shown glimpses of it. But if nothing else, you can be sure that he's going to get in there and find a way to create offense for himself, which is a valuable thing coming off the bench, especially for a team like the Raps that don't have a lot of those guys.
Yeah, and they don't have a lot of wing scoring in general, so it's nice to get that kind of position. That output from that position, you know, moving away from just all the trade talk, because you know what, trade deadline, it's really exciting, but it's, I don't know, man. It's almost like, it reminds me of like shopping at Winners. Like, you're just like looking around, you're like, maybe I get this bargain, then you just like leave with a pair of socks. You're not getting actual anything.
You spend like 3 hours in there, and then you just leave with a pair of socks. Yeah, that's what this is. We're just spending all this time, and it is.
You're like, oh man, Nemanja Bjelica, and it's like, you don't need that. You just put it down and go.
It's a fun time of the year. And even last year there was a lot of movement. But even after the trade deadline, it's like, oh, well, okay, Anthony Davis didn't go anywhere. We thought maybe he would. Like, Marc Gasol, that's a pretty big deal. And Tobias Harris. But, like, it still kind of made you feel empty a little bit.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. So, moving away from that, Moving away from at least the Raptors trade deadline kind of thing, if you look at sort of the rest of the landscape, I guess maybe part of their moves may be at least in part dictated based on whether the other teams in the East also make a move. And, you know, in that front, it seems like the Heat have been linked to a lot of things. I'm not sure if that's just, I don't know, their strategy of leaking stuff or anything like that, but there might just be a real intent to actually add something there. But in terms of the rest of the East, could you see something, a kind of move or a kind of upgrade somewhere in the rest of the East? We're talking just top six, that can sort of at least swing the balance of the conference, or not even necessarily swing the balance, but clearly there's Milwaukee up top and then like a group of five teams that are kind of like jostling for position in the middle there. Is there a move that could sort of disrupt that hierarchy?
Well, whether directly or indirectly, the Raptors reacted to Milwaukee and Philadelphia making moves last year. And those are the teams, I mean, they're still sort of interesting in that Milwaukee, there's so much on, they're really good, but there's so much on the line for them this year.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they've got to, this is it. I mean, they've got to show Giannis that they're serious, not only about winning, but surrounding him with the right guys. So maybe there's pressure to go out there and make a big move. And then also, I think if you're looking ahead, like, this is a big year for them in terms of how far they go. And they know that too, because they make the finals. Certainly, if they win a championship, then it's far more likely, I think, that Giannis signs that Supermax extension over the summer. If they don't make the finals, he's probably not signing that extension. And then all of a sudden, you're spending an entire season with everybody looking at you, talking about you, and following Giannis around like everybody did Kawhi last year. And I can't imagine they want that. So I think there's a lot of pressure on Milwaukee right now to do something. And then Philadelphia, based on how poorly they've played, and just, I mean,
that situation's a mess.
No, and I'm not surprised by it either. I wasn't sold on their roster construction last year. They didn't, to me, make a whole lot of sense. They had a lot of talent. They didn't make a whole lot of sense. Now, to me,
they
make even less sense. They have less shooting. They have more size in a league that's sort of moving away from those types of lineups. I don't know what they do, but for them, like, it's not okay. The Raptors can make a smaller type move and bring in some depth or Chertz or whatever and feel pretty good about it. But like, there's no small move that's going to fix Philly. If they're going to do something and it's actually going to make a difference, like, they've got to do something huge. And I don't think
it's a fundamental problem for them.
Absolutely. So I don't know. I think those two are interesting to me.
I feel like Boston could really use a legit center. They put up a graphic. I was watching Sixers Celtics on Saturday. I guess that was a primetime game on ABC. And, you know, it was funny because Embiid played in that game, but he was garbage. He was like 1 of 11 and just had a really tough game. But they showed a graphic of the Celtics centers, and it was so sad. It was like Vincent Poirier, Grant Williams, Enes Kanter, Taco Fall, who's like a meme.
Yep.
Daniel Tice. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if you could trust any of those five guys reliably in a playoff series who can actually go up against the kind of centers in the East. I mean, whatever. They did do a good job against Embiid that night. But I feel like they could probably use a move. Like, if Capella's available, I feel like Capella can make a kind of an impact. But then again, Capella doesn't really fit what they do offensively either. So, it's hard to see. And in Indiana, I mean, no one even talks about Indiana, but I don't really see them making a move either, just because I think they just want to know what the team looks like with Victor involved. Right. And they already made their move in the offseason. They gave up those two first-round picks to go and sign Brogdon. Those two first-round picks from Indy, by the way, that could probably be where Milwaukee uses those picks for an upgrade. But even with Milwaukee, it's like, what are you going to upgrade on a 42-7 team?
Yeah.
Like, are you going to get like a
better point
guard?
And they've got a ton of depth, too. If anything, like, the move that they need to and probably want to make is consolidate. I'm sure they'd love to do something similar to what the Raptors did last year, where you're trading like three guys for one player that's going to be an upgrade at one of the at some position for them. But yeah, I mean, I think for them, like, it just might make more sense to try and consolidate some of that depth.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what kind of piece that they're bringing in that's making the difference there.
Yeah, exactly.
At least right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Again, it's shaping up to be a kind of a cold trade deadline. And, I mean, we'll see, though. I think, you know, the Raptors, as sophisticated as they are, I'm sure they'll have contingency plans and they'll have, you know, I mean, I don't know, IBM Watson will spit up something.
And as we were saying earlier, all it takes is one move around the league, one team to take a big swing and make a big move, and then all of a sudden, especially if it's early enough in the day, then other teams are reacting to it, and then your quiet trade deadline might not be so quiet after all. So who knows? And that's why this is such an interesting time of the year.
Yeah, like if Philly somehow ended up with Jrue Holiday, that's a move that would be that would make a lot more sense. I still don't think they're that lethal if they've made something like that, but yeah. That situation is just very awkward. I don't know why they paid Al Horford that much money last year. That just didn't make sense. You never thought, man, if this team just had Al Horford, they...
I like Al Horford a lot, but like Al Horford's a five, man. Yeah. Like, and
he's $109 million backup five.
Oh man,
in the modern NBA. All right, so All-Star Weekend, the Raptors have two All-Stars and a coach. First, I think honestly, I mean, it's amazing what Pascal has done. His story has sort of been told to death. And obviously, Kyle Lowry continues to be excellent. He's kind of defying age at this point. I kind of just want to focus a little bit on Nick Nurse. I feel like, first off, for you, like, you know, obviously, you know, we speak to Nick a lot just in terms of just, you know, through whatever appearances and availabilities and things like that. I'm new to the beat, but, you know, you were there obviously through a lot of the Casey, if not all of the Casey years.
Yeah, my first year was Casey's first year, 2011.
Okay, yeah. So how would you compare sort of just like the what it's like to work with these guys, the difference there, and also just in general, Nick Nurse making it to the All-Star game? I mean, did you see this coming when the Raptors ultimately settled on Nurse, you know, I guess last two summers ago?
Well, the great irony when they made the coaching change was so many people were so upset about it, if for no other reason, then it was like, okay, well, you fired Dwayne Casey. He was beloved coach, very popular. A lot of people questioned that move, but even the people that didn't, that understood it, was like, okay, so you go out and you either people either wanted like a big name, somebody that's been in the league for a while, that's been a head coach in the league before, or you just wanted somebody that was like, okay, well, just go out and get somebody completely different.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I remember talking myself into Sarunas Yesikevicius.
Yeah. People hated the idea that you are hiring a guy from the exact same coaching staff. You just fired the head coach. Mm-hmm. You're promoting his assistant. How is that different? But the great irony here, and I knew that this was the case at the time. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize how much it was the case until you start to see what Nick does more in the head coaching role. But the great irony here is that those two men as head coaches are completely different.
They really are.
And it's
are.
Not a knock at like Dwayne Casey's a great coach. And Nick Nurse is a great coach. They're just two very different coaches.
Yep.
So that's, I think, what stood out more than anything else over the year and a half that we've seen Nick at the helm now. And I think that's something that Masai really wanted. He wanted a different approach. There are similarities, sure, but he wanted a different approach and a different energy. And that, I think, is the biggest thing about Nick. And what I really pick up on is his presence and his energy. There's a calmness to him, which I think really helps. I think it really helped last year when there was just this, like, there could have been a lot of, it could have been really awkward in that room throughout the year, whether it was the Kawhi and the contract situation that was hovering over them, Kawhi and the way that he was treated is different from other players, the load management and all of that. If that isn't managed.
Kyle being Kyle,
especially at the beginning of the year with the DeMar stuff.
Yeah.
That had a lot of potential to blow up and be a disaster. But then you had Nick, who sort of brought this like calm energy. He gets on you more than most. I mean, he's not afraid to call guys out. We've seen it time and time again. So it's not like I wouldn't call him like a player's coach in the traditional sense. And I wouldn't say that he's some like pushover that you can walk all over and he's there to play his guitar and sing Kumbaya and all that. But I think with a lot of coaches, including Dwayne Casey, it's such a high-stress, high-stakes job that you can sort of sometimes that stress begins to – you can sense it.
Yeah.
And other players, they pick up on it, and then it just seeps its way throughout the locker room, whereas I haven't sensed that at all in two very different types of seasons with two very different types of rosters with Nick as the head coach. So I think that's probably his best quality, in addition, obviously, to all the creativity and the innovation and all that on the court. I think off the court, that presence and that leadership has become what's defined him as a head coach, basically.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just, you. I don't know, you're right, he does have this presence about him where he's just very, he's very silently confident, if not outwardly, even if he's outwardly, I don't know, somehow still kind of doesn't, it still surprises you almost. He's
he doesn't stress the small things.
He
I
really
think
doesn't.
It's like...
That picture of him walking off the plane with the headphones on and the guitar bag.
Yeah.
Going into Milwaukee, of all places.
I think there's a life lesson here, though, because it's like there's so many things in life, regardless of what your profession is, to worry about. Like real things in this really messed up world of ours to worry about. So to spend time and energy stressing the small, insignificant details, it's a waste of time. And I think like that's what Nick has brought to the table more than anything else. I remember with Dwayne Casey, like it would be every game. Okay, well, who's the starter? Who's playing? Who's not playing? Mm-hmm. I remember it was like such a big secret one game a few years ago that Tyler Hansbrough was going to start. We can't tip the other team off.
That's right, that's
we
right,
can't
that's
let them know that Hansbrough's starting. Whereas now it's like with Nick, it's like when is he ever? He's not coy with that kind of stuff. He'll tell you the lineups. Tell you because he knows it's not a big deal.
And he'll tease you with the starting lineup too sometimes.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it's no, Nick has been a really good hire. And again, like it's only a year and a half into the job, but he has the second highest win percentage in NBA history right now. It's pretty damn good.
Rock star. Imagine being Nick Nurse with the...
Oh, yeah. And apparently he's a great piano player as well. Have you heard him play piano?
He has one in his office, so I've heard it sort of from a distance. He'll play sometimes after practice.
Yeah, seriously, a renaissance man.
And I didn't realize how much... I knew he had the connection with Chicago. I didn't realize how much Chicago meant to him, so that seems to be a big part of this All-Star story, too. He was telling us the other day that his late father was stationed there at the end of World War II, so there was a connection... From the get-go with his family, with Chicago, and then growing up 5 hours away, he'd make the drive and visit his sister who lived there, go to Cubs games. He's a huge Cubs fan, and then they spent time, obviously, there in the summer, throwing out the first pitch and being a rock star at the seventh inning stretch. So
yeah, the voice was not bad either. I guess he plays piano. He can sing a little bit. Yeah, man, what a time to be Nick Nurse.
This is what happens when you don't stress the small stuff. You have time to... play the piano and the guitar and enjoy life.
Yeah, that is true. Now I'm gonna leave this break, you know, with a tease. I'm about to ask you what the 2021 strategy with Giannis is. But in the meantime, before we get to that, before Josh tells you with outright certainty the Raptors are signing Giannis, all right, quote it right now.
Yep.
I gotta tell you that baseball has hot dogs, football has nachos. So when does basketball get its official food? How about right now? Kentucky Fried Chicken, the new official food of basketball. Think about it. Basketball players make buckets all the time. KFC makes buckets all the time. And theirs are filled with fried chicken, like famous original recipe or crispy popcorn chicken or even juicy tender. So that settles it. KFC, the official food of basketball. Order at KFC.ca and get it before tip-off. Now, Giannis, 2021. How real is this? Everyone wants to know.
I mean, if he's out there, if he's available, and that's a big if in and of itself, I think they have a shot. I mean, like, I don't know how good that shot is, how likely it is, just because it seems – I mean, it's so situational. We, as we saw with Kawhi, Kawhi had so many good reasons to stay in Toronto if he valued those reasons, and I'm sure he did to some degree.
Right.
But the thing that he valued above all else is – going home, the warm weather, I'm sure, was a factor, being around his family, California, all of that. We don't know what Kawhi's, sorry, what Giannis's top priority is, what he values. He hasn't talked about that. And even the people close to him, it's not like it was with Kawhi where there was leaks even years before about what that top priority was. So that's the biggest factor if he's out there is like we don't know what will appeal to him. But that said, I think the Raptors, first of all, they've earned the right to be in the room, not just with Giannis, but with great players. And that was Masai Ujiri's goal from the get-go. That's one of the things he talked about. It's like, it's something that they had never done. And, and it's still something, it's so interesting, because as much as the Raptors have done as a franchise, they've won the championship, check. They've kept their own free agents, which was huge. I mean, Bosch and Vince, like, they stayed, but they were... time coming off of their rookie contracts, restricted free agent, I guess. Like, everybody stays, mostly. Those star players
stay. You
gotta
get the money first.
Right, but there hadn't been a guy that had chosen to stay in Toronto instead of it going wherever else, that had the freedom to do so until DeMar did it and Kyle did it multiple times. So that was a huge step for them. But the one thing that they still haven't done is the one thing that Masai's talked about doing, and going out and pitching themselves, selling themselves, and recruiting a big name free agent. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that the stigma still exists. Let's put it that way. The stigma still exists that players, star players, don't want to go and play in Toronto. I think they're at a point now where they've shaken that enough with the championship and the way that they've built a well-regarded franchise, the player development, the scouting, the practice court, the G League team, all of that, where they have a case that they can make, and it's a good case. From there, like I said, I think it's just sort of situational. Masai does have a relationship with Giannis. Mm-hmm.
It's not a secret anymore.
That's not a secret. It's not fake. It's not made up.
Giannis has talked about it.
Masai's relationship with Giannis. Masai's relationship with Giannis's family. So that might be your in. That might be an advantage that the Raptors have, in addition, obviously, to that sales pitch that I think that they can make and feel really good about. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it's just a matter of what he wants. But I think the overarching theme here is we don't know even if he's going to be out there. And that's why I say, and we talked about it earlier, is this is such a huge few months for Milwaukee. What do they do here at the trade deadline? What do they do in the playoffs? Do they go far enough to appease Giannis to the point where he says, all right, well, this is where I want to be? Or does he feel like, even if he doesn't know that he wants to leave, does he want to keep things open next year and test the free agent market? Which, I mean, a lot of guys do.
Yeah. I think if we're going to talk about realistic, obviously people make jokes, people like to fantasize about these things. But even if he doesn't re-sign with Milwaukee, or he doesn't sign the extension with Milwaukee, there's going to be an incredible amount of competition for him. It's not like the Raptors are the only team in the league outside of Milwaukee that have the chance to sign Giannis. A lot of teams are opening themselves up for it. The Miami Heat are, for example, a team that are trying to open themselves up for it, and also it's Miami. That's a free agent destination, right?
Everyone's hoarding that cap space right now.
Exactly. And, Giannis is the top of that list. And so there's going to be an incredible amount of just competition for a great player like that. I think at least, if you had to guess, all these free agent meetings, like Kevin Durant, for example, took 6 meetings famously. LeBron will take he took a couple of meetings. Kawhi took 3 meetings, right? Whichever X number of meetings that Giannis takes, I do feel like if he gets to that point where he hits free agency, I hope that Toronto can at least be one of those teams. And I think, maybe it's a personal relationship, maybe it's the organization, maybe it's the fact that he's not an American-born player. I think it's a little bit more likely, I think, just if you just think logically, an American-born player would probably want to play more in America than in Canada.
100%.
If all things were equal. And, it might not be the same when you're, born to Nigerian immigrants in Greece. And, it just could be different. But
and the Raptors love to pack that arena with Greek fan night or whenever he's in town.
Yeah.
Greek flags everywhere, which I'm sure is not a coincidence. Yeah. They like to remind him that we got the Danforth here. The Greek community here is strong.
Yeah, I mean, and then Masai will bring the other half of that. If you could bring back one player between the two of here, Serge or Marc Gasol, because the center position after this season, a little bit up in the air.
Yeah.
Both expiring deals, both older players, but both very productive players and unselfish. Realistically, it's probably only one of the two, you would guess.
I would agree, yeah.
And if you had to make one or two.
That's really tough because they're both so different. Like, they both do, and that's why they work so well together now, and that's why I can't see them moving either of them at the deadline, is, like, you need what both of them give you. So it's really tough. I mean, Gasol is probably the slightly more valuable player just in terms of what he brings, but then he's also the older player. But I would imagine if you're re-signing one of those guys in the offseason, given the 2021 and what's ahead, it's got to be on a one-year deal anyway, so maybe you bring back Gasol on a one-year deal, if for no other reason than I think he'd probably be more amenable to that than Serge would be for a one-year deal, when he could probably get more elsewhere.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think I'm leaning the same way. Quick question though, what's the long-term strategy, if there is a long-term strategy against around a guy like Chris Boucher, who I think he's really proven himself this year, seems to be definitely on the come up. I mean, before it was like throw him in garbage time and he'll do some things, but now he's actually for the most part executing defensive schemes pretty well. He's a little jumpy, but you know, he's got to get his IG highlights. But you know, on the whole, he's really made himself into a quite a nice player, and he's contributed to multiple wins this year. Is there a long-term strategy against Chris Boucher, who's also, I think he's restricted after this
year? Yeah, so it's like a little bit of the new Lucas Negreira, where it's like the numbers and the production in a small sample is really intriguing if you take that and extrapolate it over a longer period of time or in a regular role. There's questions like there was about Bebe over whether or not he can fill that role. I think with both of them, it was like, I mean, Bebe just was more fragile than Boucher seems to be. Despite the fact that they have a similar frame. Mm-hmm. I think there's probably more mental and physical toughness going on with Boucher. But I think there's still a question, like probably about position more than anything else. Where does he play? Because like, let's say you don't pick up any front court insurance at the deadline, and one of those bigs, something were to happen to them, they get hurt or whatever. Like, I still think you feel a little bit uneasy in a playoff series throwing Boucher in there just because of the physical strength, especially if Gasol is out and you need him at center. But he's a guy, going into the season, I didn't know what he was. G League MVP, dominated last year in the G League, but I wasn't sure if he could be an NBA rotation player. I believe now that he is an NBA rotation player. I still don't know where in that rotation he fits, positionally or even in terms of the hierarchy necessarily, but he's an NBA player.
Definitely. Yeah.
And a fun one, too.
Very fun. Just really fun to watch, especially in these, like, January, February games, people are a little sluggish. And then you just bring Chris Boucher in there. It's like you just like took a shot at Red Bull, basically.
Yeah, he's like the change of pace running back that you throw in there just to like...
Yeah, I mean, he really is like a running back. I think he reminds... I don't know, the Raptors' center rotation. I said this like on Twitter a couple of weeks back. I don't really watch football like that, but it reminds me of the Giants, the early one in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
The Earth, Wind, and Fire year. And it's like, you know, I don't know which one is specifically which one, but Chris Boucher is very much a guy who does something entirely different than what Serge and Mark does.
Yeah.
He actually rolls to the rim and finishes hard, for one, which is nice to see. In terms of the point guard position, so I think if you kind of just read around this, you know, read around the lines, I think Bobby Webster went on Tim and Sid, and he sort of talked about, he was asked about Fred as well, and you know, they're not going to say outright, like, hey, we're going to re-sign him for this amount of money. Don't worry about it. It's already done. But it definitely seems like everyone is pretty optimistic about it, and I think there's definitely a lot of interest in keeping Fred around. Is that also your sense of the situation?
Yeah, that's as tight-lipped as the Raptors are, that's not a well-kept secret. They love Fred. They want to keep Fred for everything that he brings off the court as much as everything that he brings on the court. He's become such a huge part of the culture and the foundation and the team in general. It's funny how he and Siakam are the same age, and yet even Pascal looks to Fred as like this like mentor. And,
yeah. And it's been that way from... I think a younger age, just because he's always sort of like, even that bench mob, he was the leader of that bench mob. And even as a rookie, he came in, it didn't look very shaken by very much. He's always had a presence about him. And obviously now we've seen it, like in the NBA Finals, we've seen Fred have a presence about him, you know?
They want to keep him, and he wants to stay. I can say both of those things with confidence, but he's also he's a businessman, he's smart and good for him, and he should be. And he if there is a deal out there that's going to pay him and going to take care of him and his family and make him happy, then he should take it. Especially if the Raptors decide this is too rich for our blood right now, and that's the only way, really. That's the only scenario where I can see things not working out. Because I imagine if you're the Raptors, I mean, it's not like with Siakam where he's clearly a max player.
Yeah,
and
there's no negotiation. Really.
There's no negotiation. There was a negotiation with Siakam because I mean, if you're the team, there was. He wasn't like a clear max player in the sense of like the Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah,
sure. So there is, I guess, some wiggle room. But at the end of the day, the Raptors knew they wanted to keep him. They knew they would go as high as they needed to. That's probably not the case with Fred. As much as they like him, there's a cap.
Yeah, for sure.
At some point, they've sat down and they've said if they haven't already, they will. this is all we can spend, given what we think he's worth, but probably more than anything else, what we know that we need to save for 2021, to have that flexibility. So ultimately, I think if another team comes out there and really values him and has that money to spend and throws a lot of money at him, then maybe the Raptors just say, okay, well, listen, we can't do this. If you're Fred and it's the difference of a few million dollars
between like playing for the Knicks or Detroit and versus being in Toronto,
then maybe that's where he says, okay, well, hometown discount.
Yeah.
Even though he's not really the hometown discount type of guy, he is. There's a loyalty there.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure.
There's a loyalty there, and I do think, if nothing else, he's not a restricted free agent, but I do think he would do the Raptors the courtesy of saying, like, okay, well, I got this offer.
Yeah.
What can you do here? Even though he doesn't have to do that as an unrestricted free agent. So that's really the only scenario I can see where things don't work out. And because there are teams out there that are going to have money, and he's going to be one of the biggest names on the market, probably only a couple of those teams that really need a point guard. But yeah, all it takes is one. All it takes is one team to really value him and throw him. I don't know. What are you thinking in terms of range?
I mean, I think they can get up to – Blake broke the numbers down, and part of it is dependent on Pascal, whether he hits the bonuses in his contract with All-NBA and stuff like that. But, you know, I mean, I'm comfortable with, like, even, like, 22, 23.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable. Here's the thing. Like, if you look at Fred's age 25 season versus Kyle's age 25 seasons, they're remarkably similar. And, you know, Kyle that year, that was his first year. He kind of mostly started his games. Before that, he obviously had a very different start to his career than Fred did. But – they're kind of virtual clones of each other. And as much as Kyle Lowry is excellent, he's going to a sixth All-Star game, there's a future Hall of Fame case that, honestly, I'm 50-50 on, but even 50-50 for Kyle was unthinkable, like, even 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, like, you need a succession plan long-term for Kyle, and, yeah, this is...
It's not Patrick McCaw.
Well, you know, if Nick Nurse gets his way.
I mean, the only concern that I have with Fred... You sort of mentioned it there with Kyle in terms of, like, early on in his career, there wasn't as many miles on his legs.
Sure.
Because of the role and the minutes, which has allowed him to carry such a substantial workload later in his career, whereas Fred is – I mean, his minutes weren't crazy up until this year also, but just the role and the beating that he takes, the way that he plays, Kyle wasn't really always like that, at least not in like the way that he is now with the Raptors, where he's taking charges and playing those big minutes. Whereas Fred, like, those are hard falls that he takes. He's already accumulating a lot of, like, smaller ailments.
Yeah.
The back thing has been lingering. And his body type. I mean, for any of those guys that are generously listed as 6 feet like Kyle is, it's...
I like how they were like, this year the measurements are real. And then you go there and you're like, they're not real.
They're a little bit more real than they were, but still not really real. Yeah, no, I mean, neither of them are 6 feet.
No, they're not.
But with Kyle, as much as people like to make fun of, or at least one point would make fun of the body type, like, that body type has helped him sustain, man.
Yeah, that's true.
Because those are some hard hits that he takes, but he's got some, like...
Yeah,
he's got some padding there, whereas with Fred, he doesn't as much, and you sort of cringe every time he takes a fall or goes in for a layup and gets knocked down or whatever it is, because, yeah, I'm not sure how sustainable it is. But, yeah, I mean, in terms of the actual player himself, not only the on-court product and the skill set, but even the mindset, same as Pascal's. Like, those are the guys, if you're going to pay $20-plus million for anybody, pay for the Fred VanVleet's and the Pascal Siakam's, not the Andrea Bargnani's.
Well, we've come a long way as a franchise. All right. Before we end the podcast, let's go to some personal questions, just because, you know, the Raptors are nice, but, you know, we also want to know about you, Josh. First off, how did you get in the business? So you mentioned your first year on the beat was 2011. Just take us through. People always want to know how people get into what we do.
Yeah, and you can ask 10 people in the industry and you'll get 10 different answers.
Yeah,
it's such that there's no blueprint. It's there's so many different ways to do it. And for me, it was sort of very random. I had always wanted to be in sports broadcasting, journalism, and I just didn't pursue it. So I was in my early 20s, and I was sort of bouncing around in a bunch of different industries, and I was working at a bank when one of the regular customers would come in for his business, and we got to talking one day and he asked me what I wanted to do. And I mentioned sports. And he said that one of his good friends, somebody that he grew up with, is Tim McAuliffe.
Oh,
the time
sure.
of yeah, the, yeah. of the score.
Right, right.
So he said, oh, yeah, I'll give you Tim's card and give him a call. Maybe he can set you up with an internship or something. And I'm like, yeah, sure you will.
Yeah.
And like a year went by. I think it was like a year or several months where every day he'd come in and he's like, oh, I forgot that card. I'm going to give you the card. And I'm like, yeah, sure you will.
Yeah.
And then one day he came in with the card and said, Tim's expecting your call. So I did an internship with Tim and Sid. At the score, that was my first mm-hmm. experience in the business, and it was great. Those two,
yeah.
to this day, remain good friends of mine and have been great mentors along the way. But
the score launched a lot of careers, low-key, especially back in the television days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, even at the time, I was Cabby left, I think, during my time there. I was there for like four or five months.
Right, right, right.
But I was like sitting right across from Cabby, sitting next mm-hmm. to Tim and Sid. And at the time, like for somebody that had always dreamt of yeah. being in the industry, it was surreal. But as cool as it was, it's like, okay, I'm watching these guys do what I want to do.
Yeah.
And it was great experience, but I wasn't getting any reps. I wasn't getting any like hands-on experience.
That's true.
Or confidence.
Yeah.
So I went to school. I did a one-year program, sports journalism at Centennial,
right.
which was great, both in terms of the reps and the confidence, and then also networking and meeting people.
Definitely.
I met Jim Taddy there.
Okay.
At the time, it was 2011. TSN Radio had just launched. So it was the perfect time. Taddy helped hook me up with an internship there. I think it was like 2 months after the station launched.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a ton of opportunity there for growth. They were looking for people. They didn't have a lot of interns there at the time, so I was freelancing, doing a little bit of producing, a little bit of reporting, and that was the lockout shortened year where it wasn't until December
right.
where the NBA comes back and they realize, oh shoot, we don't have an NBA reporter, we don't have a Raptors reporter. So mm-hmm. they asked me to go to the only home preseason game they had that year. I didn't burn the place down. I did a passable enough job that they're like, all right, go to game two.
Yeah.
You go to game three. You go to game four.
Okay.
And then eventually they're like, okay, freelance, do the rest of the season.
Mm-hmm.
The next season I did home games and home practices. So it was like a little bit more each year until yeah. I think it was the third year that they hired me full time and had me travel. I did 2 years where it was full 82 games, mm-hmm. traveling full time, which is great experience, but not a job that's designed for any one human. I mean, even the newspaper guys split it.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, it's and I've been at TSN ever since 2011.
That's really cool, man. That's really cool. Was basketball was your favorite sport growing up? First of all, did you grow up in the city?
Just north.
Woodbridge?
Thornhill.
Okay. I didn't mean to stereotype.
The home, yeah, it's
I looked
okay.
at you, I was like Woodbridge.
The home of Andrew Wiggins, even though he refuses to acknowledge Thornhill and calls it Vaughn. He grew up in Thornhill. Yes.
Wow. Was basketball was your favorite sport? Like, what was your loyalty?
It was. Yeah. I mean, I sort of got into it, like really got into it in '95 when the Raptors were born. So like given that like I love basketball, I was playing basketball,
yeah.
I was and still am usually the shortest guy on the court when I play,
yeah,
so
yeah.
I identified more than anything else with Damon at that time. Like they team was just coming to the league, Damon was just coming into the league. He was like the relatable star, the mm-hmm. guy that was playing below the rim, that was fun, that was exciting. But it's like, okay, well, you don't have to be 6 feet, seven
yeah,
feet.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I guess he was just under 6 feet. You don't have to be 6'5", 7 feet, dunking to
right.
be a star in the NBA. So, as a kid, like that was sort of what I gravitated towards. And then Iverson and a lot of the smaller guards. JJ Barea has always been like
JJ Barea. Oh my God,
has always been like one of the guys. That's my when I'm playing rec ball, that's my even today the comp. It's just
okay. I was gonna ask you for your NBA comp.
So yeah, my NBA comp is JJ Barea.
That's not bad. JJ's still in the league.
I know.
Yeah.
He's
that's really cool, man. I mean, you've obviously seen the growth of basketball in Canada, but I mean, it must be surreal, man. It just must be because like when I first started following sports and like probably like early 2000s, it was just like, I mean, the Leafs are a bigger deal. I mean, the Leafs are always a big deal.
Yeah,
they were in the playoffs
last year. But
yeah, but I mean, at the time, we were just getting laughed at. If we watched Raptors,
yeah,
it was sometimes hard to find. It was on like three different channels, you know. Like it was just weird time. But yeah, they've come so far as a team. Your all time starting five of favorite Raptors players to deal and interact with on a daily basis.
Oh man,
and we stick with the positions. So
okay, so point guard is Fred. I mean, nobody to
not
this.
Kyle.
No, it depends on the day with Kyle. I think he'd probably tell you the same thing about me too. Okay. It just depends on the day. So we're currently good. Our relationship is currently good. Now Kyle when he wants to be is great.
Oh yeah.
He's and he wants to be this year. Like he's in a good place in life. Like I feel like it, family wise, he's a champion.
Got his money. All-star.
He's. I think Bruce Arthur wrote a piece about this recently, where like for a guy that always needs a foil, a gripe, somebody to be at odds with, he's at peace right now, and you can hear it even in the interviews, like the sideline after the game and all of that stuff. Just the tone of his voice is less combative. He's loving life, and that's great. And he's been a lot of fun to interact with this year. Point guard is Fred. In 9 years covering the team, I've never covered anyone like Fred. He checks off every single box. Not only there are other guys I'm going to list on here that are just good dudes that were good to be around, because I'm sure
Jose was great, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that's the genesis of the question, is like who is good to be around, not necessarily a quote machine, but Fred is not only great to be around, a personable guy, respectful.
He's not shy. He's not afraid to say things either.
Yeah.
He's very set in himself, so he's not worried about saying the wrong thing, because he kind of, I don't know.
There's no cliches. He will never, ever give you a cliche. It's always like he's not beating around the bush. He's not sugarcoating it. He's going to tell it as it is. He's going to give you an interesting quote. He's also going to be honest with you, which is huge. So, I mean, Fred checks off every box.
DeMar, shooting guard.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to throw Jose in there too, but Jose will be an honorable mention at the point. DeMar's on the list. If for no other reason than the growth was incredible. I mean, obviously as a player we saw it as well, but off the court, like from a guy that, I mean, I didn't cover him from the start of his career. I guess he was like two or three years in, but still at the time, I mean, he'd barely give you anything. He was just, I mean, admittedly, he was a loner. He was the shy guy that, and then just blossomed into not only a leader in the room, but somebody that was always like a really... He's just a human. Like, he's just a human being in the way that a lot of these guys don't allow themselves to be. He allowed himself to open up to us, to be real, to feel, to emote. And then there was, the analogies and the comparisons were always really fun. And what I liked about him is he was always accountable. Always.
Yeah.
Whether they won by 30 or lost by 30, and there were some 30-point losses early in his career, regardless, like he always stepped up as a leader and would talk to us after the game.
That's big. You respect that.
Yeah.
For sure.
I'm trying to think who else would be on the list. Like maybe we'll bounce around here because I want to acknowledge JV, who is...
As a center? Yeah. I figured you'd go JV. Even though Marc Gasol is like a delightful human being, so willing to talk, so patient, so generous with his time.
Yeah.
Obviously, he has a lot of great stories. He's been around a lot of great players, but I mean,
and Gasol's a better quote than JV. That's the thing about JV, and that's what I was saying earlier. There's a few guys on this list. Jose was one, and then JV is another. Where like he's not going to give you a great quote, especially not on the record. Off the record, JV was hilarious.
Yeah.
But it wasn't about that. JV is just like you don't find a spirit like that in the NBA and pro sports very often. Like just a guy that. Especially early in his career, he'd walk into a room and have to acknowledge everyone in the room. He would go and shake everyone's hand.
Oh, wow.
And even towards the end, he would do that as well. It's something you almost never see. Again, personable, knew everybody's name. Always, I mean, he had such a great sense of humor, always telling jokes and could lighten the mood. He was a lot of fun. And somebody, I mean, I haven't seen him since the trade.
That is super weird that it's been that long. I mean, he was here, I guess, for game one against Orlando.
And I didn't see him. That was a busy day for me. So I wasn't able to see him. And then they haven't been to Memphis, I don't think, right?
They play Memphis home and home in end of March.
Right. But Memphis hasn't been here. I mean, I miss the big guy.
Oh, yeah. He was a very lovable guy. I guess we're just missing small four and power four. Obviously, Kawhi. I mean, what a pleasure to do.
Oh, right. He was so much better. He was so much better than expected, I think, if for no other reason. Sure, you saw those like horror stories from San Antonio, oh, yeah, and you're just like afraid that he was going to be like a bad dude. He wasn't a bad dude.
No, not
He's
at all.
He's just a bit of a weird dude.
Definitely a weirdo.
But he was always respectful. He answered questions. Like, it's not, I don't think he ever really dodged too much, and even if he couldn't answer something, he would sort of tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
He was better than expected, but no, I don't think he makes this list. We can talk about the worst five too. I don't think he'd make that list either.
That's pretty good too, actually.
I really like Damari Carroll. I know I'm sort of on an island in Toronto when it comes to that regard.
It did not work out.
It didn't work out. Yeah. But also same sort of idea where like he was always really honest and upfront.
Mm.
Just a cool dude.
Yeah.
The resident fashionista would always be letting me know what he thought of my suits.
Oh man, listen, your suit game is crazy.
Even when he came back, I was wearing the bright blue one when he
You had it back then?
No. This was a few weeks ago when he came back with San Antonio.
Oh, okay, I see.
And he saw the suit and he's like, I like this. He's like, it's bold for you. He's like, you're taking a risk, but I appreciate it.
That's probably what he goes to bed in, to be honest. Damari, he had some fits when he was here.
The fur coat. I feel like there's a bunch of fur coats.
He had a couple hats too. Yeah,
senior swag daddy was that.
Yeah, it's one moniker? Thing. That was the moniker. Yeah, no, it's one thing if you're Serge Ibaka and you're doing it and you're an NBA champion and all that stuff. It's just the reception is entirely different when you're Damari and he was heard and it was unfortunate. It wasn't necessarily the place for him, but he did have great outfits. I'm
trying to think of who the four would be. Pascal is up there.
He's also a guy that talks a lot, not necessarily gives you the greatest quotes.
Yeah, and I feel like with him, it really depends on the day. And I feel like, there aren't many guys that like to do media, which is fine. Like, if I were them, I probably wouldn't want to do it either. But Pascal's one of those guys that, like, if it's not on the right day, if it's not on a day where, like, he's really kind of feeling cooperative, he'll kind of put up a fight. Whereas, like, with Fred, I'm sure he doesn't enjoy it all the time, too, especially with as much as he's bothered now that everybody knows he's a great quote. Yep. But he's just such a pro that he'll always do it. So,
I might be CJ Miles. That's a low-key poll, but I feel like
you
CJ...
You put him at the four?
He just... yeah.
What about Danny Green? Can we put him at the four?
Is Kevin Love on the other side?
Danny Green and CJ Miles are towards the top of that list.
Especially guys willing to talk.
Yeah. Yeah, and those guys, I mean, they both want to be in media, and they both probably will be in media. So they were really good. Patrick Patterson had his moments where he was interesting.
Okay.
People swear by Ed Davis, who's a really nice guy, and I really enjoy him when he's come back, and I've talked to him. But I missed, I think, at least his first year, maybe his second year, too. So I know, like, Eric Kareen's a big fan of Ed Davis.
It's hard for me to think about an Ed Davis quote, but... That's not really the question either. It's not who's the best quote.
He gave me a great quote when I wrote the Damar story before Damar came back for the first time last year. And I wrote that story about his kind of unique mutual connection with the city of Toronto. Ed gave me a really good quote about how, like he said, the moment that he realized it was the first time that he was a free agent. And he told Damar, even I guess he was a restricted free agent, he told Damar, take meetings, talk to other teams. And Damar's like, no.
Yeah.
And that's when he's like, all right, yeah, I realize this is – something special.
Damn. Yeah. That is true. There's not a lot of Raptor power forwards, I think. It's just, there just haven't that been that many, you know what I mean? Unless you want to go with, like, I don't even know, to be honest.
Dude, you willed this into existence from what? Woj. Another team engaged with the Houston Rockets in trade talks for center Clint Capella. The Boston Celtics.
Oh, my God.
Breaking news on this podcast.
Oh, wow. There you go. See, I knew it before Woj, clearly. yeah, I mean, that's not surprising, I guess. No. I mean, that makes sense.
Bottom five guys. I mean, Andrea Bargnani. How many times can we put him in there? He played small forward and started small forward in a playoff game. Yeah, so we can have him at small forward, power forward, and center on this team of the worst five players to deal with. Linus Klaza.
Wow. Linus Klaza, huh?
There aren't a lot of guys.
Linus Klaza a dickhead?
He was bad.
Oh, man.
The team.
Linus,
like,
man. Have some self-awareness, please.
Dudes, like people around the team hated dealing with him. We didn't have to do it as much. It's like it's not like Andrea Bargnani.
I was going to say, how many times are you grabbing Linus Klaza for a quote?
So that's why I say it wasn't as big of a deal to us. Mm-hmm. But hearing stories, like horror stories from people around the team that had to deal with him on a daily basis, he was not great. We're very.
You weren't there for Hito, were you? No, you were.
No.
Yeah, you're. Yeah, you were after
but I'm sure he would be featured heavily on this list as well. We were very fortunate. We continue to be very fortunate in that we haven't had to deal with, like, you see things around the league with, like, DeMarcus Cousins Russell Westbrook, and we've never had that. I mean, Kyle can be difficult when he wants to be, but it's nothing like that. Rudy Gay wasn't great, and that was sort of, I mean, that was just a weird time. And I kind of feel bad.
Mid-season, and then he got moved so quickly.
That couldn't have been easy for him to deal with either. Sure. But I mean, I didn't much enjoy that experience. So I guess for that reason, I'd put him on the list.
Wow. Well, and then I can't let you go without asking this question: does Eric Moreland make the bottom five team there? It's a natural transition, just because I think people don't know the full story, and you don't have to tell the full story. Yeah. Like, it's whatever. It's past history, but it does get mentioned. And does it bother that people mention it without knowing the full story? And then B, like, you know, it was just a misunderstanding.
The only thing that bothers me when people bring it up occasionally is, like, it's almost used, I feel like, as like an insult or something. Like, if somebody wants to take a shot, which is it shouldn't be a shot, because it's not basically. It was a misunderstanding. It was the first game of the playoffs last year, and I was in the locker room before the game, and sort of the running joke all season had been the locker that previously belonged to DeMar DeRozan, which at first was left open, which was a nice gesture to begin the year, and then because they only had 14 guys on the roster, leaving one spot open, tax reasons, they assigned the locker to Drake, which we didn't even I didn't even realize at the time, because I'm not a huge Drake guy. I didn't know that his nickname was the boy, so I'm looking at the locker, I'm like, who is the boy? Sometimes Kyle's sons use that locker a lot of the time. We'll sit in there waiting for their dad after the game. So I'm like, are they the boy? Who's the boy? And then somebody much cooler than me told me that it was Drake. So that became like the running joke throughout the year. It's like, why does Drake need a locker? Dude's barely even the building, let alone in the locker room. So once they signed Eric Moreland as the 15th guy, he got that locker. So I made a joke on Twitter. Never make jokes on Twitter. There's the lesson. I made a joke on Twitter that the 15th man, Eric Moreland,
has gotten
Drake's locker.
Yeah.
So he saw it almost immediately and was, I mean, I don't need to get into details, but was very upset. It was a misunderstanding. And I mean, on my part, it was, when you're tweeting things like that, you don't necessarily consider, okay, well, what would Eric Moreland think if he saw this tweet? Because Eric Moreland, who, I mean, he wasn't in Toronto for the whole year. So while I know the running joke of the Drake locker, and you know it, and fans know it because it became a thing over the year, Eric Moreland doesn't know about the Drake locker. Yeah. So he saw the tweet, saw his name, saw 15th man, which, I mean, I didn't mean it as an insult. I meant it as, like, literally
he was the 15th guy,
added to the team, which is why he got the only available locker. So he had thought that he was the butt of the joke, whereas the Drake locker was the butt of the joke.
It's the ridiculousness of the fact that there's a locker called The Boy that was dedicated to Drake for most of the year.
So it was a tweet that, I mean, I didn't consider the how he would interpret it, or how people might interpret it. That was my mistake. He didn't deal with it well, and he would admit that and has admitted that. And that was his mistake. So once, I mean, cooler heads prevailed, we sat down and talked about it, and we did. We talked about it. We both apologized for our part in the misunderstanding, and we were fine. I mean, I saw him the rest of the playoffs, and we'd say hello, congratulated him after they won. There was no issue there. But I mean, the lesson personally, and this is something that I continue to learn and continue to continue to forget that I learned, and then
you
relearn.
Run into Twitter snafus more than the average person on the beat, almost, and I feel like it's very unwarranted. I just feel bad.
But no, I mean, Twitter's dangerous because you get into this habit where you're like, I have this opinion, I have this thought, and everybody needs to know about it, which, like, that's not the way it should be, and it's not the way it ever used to be, but this is where we're at with social media now, that's true. I'm as guilty of it as anybody, where you have these thoughts and you want to share it, but one of the things that I'm trying to do now is I want to tweet less, and I want to write more, and I only say that because when I have those opinions and those thoughts, sometimes they're okay. Sometimes they're valid and they're interesting, and people want to hear about them.
Right.
But when you're writing, you can provide full context into what it is that you're trying to get out there. Full context and Whereas with Twitter, you've got 280 characters, yeah. and so much can get lost in translation, whether it's a joke, which a lot of the time gets misinterpreted on Twitter, or even if it's an opinion or a criticism about a player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the lesson. I mean, that's something that I took from that Eric Moreland situation, and something that I've taken a few times since then, and try to remember that Twitter is a really great tool for a lot of things, especially in our business. But it can also be...
yeah, there's some cost to it. I think, honestly, the lesson for everyone, just the whole situation, I guess, is sort of just... Just be a little bit less cynical about the people around the team, or just be a little bit less cynical maybe in general. I think obviously there's a lot in life to be cynical about, and I think some things are more nefarious than they are. When it comes to something like basketball reporting, like, it's just not that serious. Like, I think sometimes people see it and then they interpret it in one way, and then they form an opinion about someone they don't even know, they never really interacted with. I think this is kind of the situation that happened here, you know?
And I mean, it's tough. And then I feel if we're getting it, if I'm getting it, like, think how badly the actual players are getting it.
I think someone revealed that Pat McCaw hits like on every single negative comment about him on Twitter.
Yeah,
he must have a lot of time on his hands.
Yeah, I tweeted out like a plus minus stat of his. It wasn't even an opinion. I didn't even say anything. I just tweeted out the kind of plus minus that they had been outscored by whatever amount of points with him on the court over like a 2-game stretch, and he liked it. And I did think that actually came around the time that I was having like a bit of a Twitter crisis.
Right.
And I did think and consider, like, that's you have to be careful on there. And I mean, something like that's me doing my job, sharing a stat, and even like an opinion is also me doing my job. But I do feel for somebody like Patrick McCaw, who, I mean, is getting a lot of negative feedback right now. And while, I mean, a lot of it, if it's in terms of basketball, I mean, even if you don't like him as a player and you don't think he should be playing, like, Nick Nurse likes him as a player. Nick Nurse is playing him. It's not Patrick McCaw's fault. So don't be sending Patrick McCaw all this stuff. And
there's been injuries too. You know, like,
speaking of Twitter, one of the things I hear most often on there, one of the questions I get is, why don't you guys ask Nick?
Oh my God.
Why?
Yeah. You cowards.
We've asked him.
The White House media with President Trump and like real serious world issues, man. We're talking about the seventh man, eighth man in the rotation.
But
like,
it's also, I mean, these people need to pay more attention. We've asked him several times, maybe not in those exact words, but it's like, okay, well, what do you see in Patrick McCaw? Why did I ask him a few weeks ago when Terrence Davis only played whatever it was, the 8 minutes?
Yeah,
why?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was you, yeah.
Yeah, so we're asking those questions. At the end of the day, Nick likes him.
Yeah, that's it.
And we can ask the question 1,000 times, and that's not going to change the fact that he likes the player. That's his opinion, in the same way I have mine and you have yours and we all have ours. So it's like, I mean, hey, I don't agree. Yeah. I don't agree, like a lot of people, of Nick's assessment of Patrick McCaw, but that's one of the few things I think that I disagree with that Nick has done and is doing. And he sort of earned the benefit of the doubt to make those decisions, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's, you know, he's got a championship. He's the second winningest coach of all time. He's
a rock star.
He's a rock star. He's coaching the All-Star game. He's coaching Giannis, and he's doing the tampering. Like, you know, just maybe relax. It's not that big of a problem. Anyway, Josh, thank you. You've been so generous with your time. I don't know what you really need to plug, but anything you want to bring awareness on, you know, read Josh's primer on the Raptors' approach to trade deadline. Anything else?
No, man. At JLew1050, send me all of your Eric Moreland tweets.
Oh, man. Yeah, no more of those. Come on, we set the record straight.
And
right?
Patrick McCaw tweets.
Jeez, yeah. No, we should send Josh more of his screen caps of his suits. The suit game is elite, I got to say. There's a lot of great suits when you work in media. But
shout out Indochino.
That's where you're getting the plug?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you were going to say that as a shout out, to be honest. Because, no, I mean, even from like training camp, it was like on another level with you.
Now I feel guilty whenever I show up in
like
four
outfits for just training camp. That was amazing.
Like I got 5 new suits for this season. I had to step it up for the defending championship season.
Sure. Yeah.
And now I feel guilty whenever I show up in my old boring suits because people expect the new exciting ones.
I was gonna say, yeah, you did not have your A game for this recent game. Who will they play again? Who do they just play? This is the thing with the 11-game win streak.
Chicago.
Oh, Chicago. That's right. Yeah. Sunday.
All these games blend into one. Even last year, man, like with the championship being what it was, it's like I remember the big moments, but for the most part, the rest of it is just sort of a blur.
It's all a blur. So, Anyway, Josh, thank you so much for coming on. As for listeners of the podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe. Thanks again to KFC for sponsoring the show, and I'll be back next week with another episode.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.